One thing that strikes me very often when I'm watching any kind of sport is that it's just wonderful to watch someone do something excellently. It's just wonderful to watch a human being doing something that well.
And it always struck me, I mean, I may be getting too far afield or abstract here, but it also strikes me that sports is in some ways a mirror of the kind of other excellences of which human beings are capable.
Winning is a value, but it's not the only value, Vince Lombardi notwithstanding.
Sports and Society, next on Soundings.
The principal purpose of our voyage was not simply to gather the flora and fauna. That was my personal preoccupation. Rather, our mission was to explore and chart uncharted waters. To that end, the crew of the Beagle would drop a weighted line to the bottom and record the depth at regular intervals. The measurements were called soundings. They told us where we had been and would serve to guide those who followed.
From the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, listen now to our program called Soundings. Thoughts and ideas about the present and the future with an appreciation for the past. Your host is Wayne Pond.
The National Humanities Center now presents the first in a series of discussions about sports and social values. Speaking in the following order, the participants are Robert Bryan, professor of religion and philosophy and chairman of the Athletic Council at North Carolina State University in Raleigh; George Schur, a member of the Department of Philosophy at the University of Vermont and a scholar in residence at the National Humanities Center; and William Bennett, director of the National Humanities Center. Let's look at the argument that professional sports have gotten out of hand. There's too much of an emphasis, one, on making money, and two, on winning, that the whole business of developing character really doesn't play that much of a part anymore. What do you say to that argument?
Well, I don't think it is the function, I don't think it was ever the function of professional sport to develop character. The function of professional sport is to provide entertainment, if that's the proper word, for the spectators. And by definition, those involved in professional sports are going to be paid for it. Now, whether or not some professional athletes take advantage of their positions, are vulgar in their negotiations, is another question.
But I take it, I mean, I'd agree with you. The purpose of professional sports is mainly the entertainment of the fans, of all of us who spend our good part of our Sundays watching. But it isn't one of the objections here about professional sports and its relation to character, not so much a matter that, well, we thought it was for character all along, but the kind of example or the kind of teaching, we might say, that such professional sports does or fails to do. Now, because one thing we know is that watching on these Sunday afternoons are lots of children. And so we worry, we sort of come back at the rationale for it from what we see, and we say, well, whether it was set up for character or not, our children watch, they imitate, they emulate, and because then of the emphasis on winning and perhaps all the money, the players don't perform up to levels we'd like them to, given that they are such visible examples to young people of a certain kinds of excellence, and we'd like that other kind of excellence to be conjoined with it.
Well, I think it's morally incumbent upon all of us not to. Goes for you, goes for me, goes for everybody.
One thing I'd say in defense of that, using a sports a term that applies to sports too, is that if we're gonna lay blame here, it seems to me it ought to be distributed among more people. Is most of the behavior of professional athletes bad? Is most of what one sees in a game not exemplary? I don't think so. I think it's important still that you were penalized for taking a shot at somebody out of bounds. So, what's judged to be an unfair shot. That is, there's a set of rules. The rules are pretty much adhered to. Referees do, I think, call them like they see them. And kids can see and do see, don't they, people being penalized, punished here for acting outside the bounds. Just let me add quickly the point about distributing the blame. Here, like elsewhere, I don't want to flog this horse. It's been flogged enough, but we know that the cameras and the commentators are interested in highlighting that cheap shot, and we see as many replays of the cheap shot sometimes as we see of the touchdown pass. But most of a game, seems to me, and I'm somebody who watches a lot of games at the professional level, is played fairly.
Well, we're talking about the cheap shot off camera, the behavior of the athlete off the field.
Again, I mean, one can point to certain individuals and certain incidents which get lots of publicity. But do you conclude from that the behavior of professional athletes is more reprehensible, is worse than the behavior, say, of professional bankers or lawyers or doctors or philosophers? I don't get that sense overall. I don't see the evidence for that anyway. To conclude, certainly there are things done on fields of play by those who play these games and off the field of play after hours, which no one would suggest is exemplary or decent. But this doesn't seem to me to be an indictment of the sport. This is an indictment of individuals for either the way they play the game or the way they handle themselves outside of the game.
You know, and I don't think that there's any necessary connection between the two. I don't think the sport somehow breeds that kind of behavior at all. On the contrary, as a matter of fact, we are taught, all of us, I was, as a kid, that sport is supposed to build character, that you're supposed to cooperate and respect the other man's position and so on.
Well, maybe what we're talking about is all of the things that have grown up around sports. The discussion's been about professional sports.
Yeah, I felt the urge to play devil's advocate here. And it does seem to me that if one is going to be critical of the sorts of professional sports that we see on television, that one basis for criticism might be the rule structures of some of the sports. I mean, I'm thinking, for instance, of hockey, where the charge has been made that the rules are not set up to discourage brawling on the ice, and that indeed teams can fill the arenas by having one or two enforcers on the team who are there basically to slug the other guys. I think you might say the same thing perhaps about certain rules in football. It's no accident that there are lots of injuries of certain sorts in football. Presumably those injuries could be minimized by certain kinds of rule changes. So, I mean, I think you can point to the structure of some professional sports and be rather critical about the sorts of behavior that the structure encourages.
Yeah, you know, when I said what I said about professional sports, I was wondering whether to make the one thing that's an exception in my mind explicit at that point, which is ice hockey, professional ice hockey. It seems to me there's an aura that surrounds certain sports and not others that leads or invites violence of certain sorts and what we might call non-exemplary behavior. And ice hockey is one of them. I mean, if you think of the way that you'll hear ice hockey games, professional ice hockey games, advertised often, they'll say the brawlers are coming in and there should be a lot of fights on the ice. And lots of fans will tell you that's why they go, to see the fights. And one thing I mentioned before about football, the referees call those penalties, call them as they see them. You notice in ice hockey, referees often are, well, maybe not reluctant to call the penalty, but they let the fight go on for a little while before they break it up. I think this happens often in ice hockey, and that's, I think, part because that's what people came for. The idea that hockey is blood on ice is not something that is hidden all that often from the fans. In fact, used as a way to promote it.
You think that is why the people come? Suppose that we change the rules in ice hockey. I don't know that sport very well, and perhaps the rules can't be significantly changed. But suppose that we did, so as to minimize the kind of violence that you're talking about. Do you think that we'd lose the fans? Do you think that we would perhaps attract true sports fans and lose the less desirable ones?
Well, fair enough. I mean, I don't think you'd lose a lot of hockey fans, but I think you would lose a lot of violence fans. I've gone to some of these professional hockey games in cities up north in Boston, and it was clear to me that one of the reasons a lot of people were there was to see the fighting, because you didn't hear very much comment about the passing or the stick work, but here comes Bobby and he's gonna bust him in the nose. Now, you know, those things happen in all sports, and you hear fans talking about that in all sports, but it does seem to me ice hockey in some ways panders to that kind of interest in ways that the other sports don't.
Not in the Olympics here recently.
Not in the Olympics.
And that's, I think, is a significant event, isn't it?
Yes, indeed.
We were caught up in that thing,
yes,
and wanted no violence.
Yeah, I'd want to restrict it, I think, this one to professional.
Yeah, Bill, I want to ask you about that. So you don't think that applies to football? I mean, despite the fact that the object in football often seems not to be just to knock a guy down, but to really knock him down in such a way that he hears footsteps next time he's running a pattern. But you don't think that that there's the same sort of violence built into the game of football?
It's
avoidable violence.
It's a quantity, a comparative thing. It's a continuum, and obviously there are elements of violence in all these sports, even in baseball. You see this in the benches empty and the fans cheer. And in football, we've had terrible incidents on the field where the fans got involved and threw bottles at receivers, quarterbacks. But on a continuum, I would say, if we took all professional sports and made a continuum and said invitations to violence, mayhem, and had it up on a meter, my experience is that professional hockey would be at one end, and I think maybe baseball at the other. I haven't thought that all the way through, and football somewhere in between, basketball right there too.
My initial question was, what good are sports? We've been kicking around a lot of criticism here. What is it that's good about it, George?
All right. One thing that strikes me very often when I'm watching any kind of sport is that it's just wonderful to watch someone do something excellently. I have that reaction maybe most when I'm watching basketball, even the NCAA playoffs, certainly professional basketball. Those guys are just so good at what they do. It's just wonderful to watch a human being doing something that well. Also related to that, I think that it's very apparent often just how much training and perseverance and effort went into achieving that level of excellence. I find that quite inspiring as well.
My judgment is a kind of imitation. I mean, here on this point of excellence, they are often just a sheer display of excellence. Take the Olympics, for example. I mean, how many million people watched that hockey game, the U.S. one, or the gymnastics events, and so on, or a great World Series, that great Red Sox-Reds World Series, for example. And you're seeing high quality performance. You're seeing real excellence. And it always struck me, I mean, I may be getting too far afield or abstract here, but it also strikes me that sports is in some ways a mirror of the kind of other excellences of which human beings are capable. It suggests, these phrases that we throw around, sometimes half jokingly, that coaches throw around halftime talks, reaching in to yourself, getting your best, pulling your best out of yourself for performance. These are things which one can see exemplified in sports, and yet they can carry over to other contexts. The other thing, I'm not really all that qualified to speak of it, maybe George or Bob can, is the aesthetic dimension. It's quite clear it's there. Somebody said the most beautiful thing in the world is a double play, well executed. And it's true, there's a kind of ballet there.
Yes, as George was talking about basketball and the excellence there, I was immediately reminded of David Thompson, whom I saw as a collegiate player and whom I very much admired.
Where did he play, Bob?
At North Carolina State University, where I happen to have some connection with that university.
I wondered if this was a coincidence. It's picking someone out of a hat.
Right.
The name out of a
random. And I've heard him compared to a ballet dancer. And I think it's an apt comparison. Just beautiful control of his body, beautiful timing, balance, all the rest. It's a thing of beauty, no doubt about it. And I was also reminded, as George was talking about excellence as being one of the great values of sports. I know of only one technical philosopher who has ever written seriously about sport, and that's Paul Weiss, who's professor of philosophy emeritus at Yale. And he wrote a book entitled Sport. And it was his contention in this book that the function of sport, what drives human beings to be engaged in sport, is the seeking after excellence. That was his main thrust in the book. So I was taken with George's point.
From the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, you're listening to Soundings. Putting ideas into circulation. Here again is your host, Wayne Pond.
This is the first in a series of discussions about sports and social values. The participants in the conversation, speaking in the following order, are William Bennett, director of the National Humanities Center, George Schur, a scholar in residence at the center and a member of the Department of Philosophy at the University of Vermont, and Robert Bryan, professor of religion and philosophy and chairman of the Athletic Council at North Carolina State University in Raleigh. Let me, gentlemen, let me quote you one of the eminent commentators about sports today, Dr. George Sheehan, who is the Ralph Waldo Emerson to the running set. Sheehan says that sports has no meaning, but it gives purpose to life.
Why not? Why would he say it doesn't have meaning? See, I think that's somebody who's going too far saying, well, we've got to link it up with something that's really important, otherwise we can't make sense of it. But why can't we make sense of it in itself? In some of the terms we've been talking about it, it usually is good for the body. Not always, because you sometimes get things broken and battered.
Well, there are people, for instance, who say that jogging is very popular, running is popular, that make of it a religion, make of it a philosophical, or invest in it a philosophical dimension. This is one of the reasons that Sheehan is criticized. Is there a philosophical dimension to sport?
Well, I mean, philosophers can talk about sports, I think, and philosophers can appreciate sports. But I think, if I interpret your drift here, I'm kind of wary of making too much cosmologizing out of sports. I remember a book that came out in defense of sports some time back, and it said, it was in praise of football, this part of the book, and I thought it was interesting that the man pointed out, he said at one point, the person who hasn't played football has missed one of the closest brushes with the transcendental, which man is capable. I like football, and I must say there's a religious side to me, but I think the marriage at that point was unfortunate. I don't know what kind of an argument that is.
Well, this is like Mr. Rooney, one of the organizers of the Boston Marathon, went through a series of interviews with the participants in the marathon, and many of them were spouting this transcendental baloney about religion, running as a religion. And he said, hey, wait a minute. He says it's one foot in front of another. That's all it is.
There are some things. I think it was Whitehead who said, when a student asked him, "Sir, what is the real? What is the real world? What is the nature of the real?" Whitehead thought a minute and said, thinking of his experience as a young man, said, "Well, you want to know what the real is?" He said, "I suggest you play scrum and rugby." And he said, "As you're down on the ground with people kicking at your head and you're clamoring for the ball, you will say, if you have the presence of mind, my God, this is real." And sports can be a way of discovering that.
Question I'd like to put to George Schur. Somebody, some philosopher, I think it was, characterized human behavior, and since we're talking about sports typifies a lot of behavior, as either agonic or hegonic, which is to say aggressive and mean and nasty and hierarchical, or sharing and social and giving of one another. Is that really an oversimplification? Is there something wrong with that characterization?
As I understand it, it suggests a division of sporting enterprises into those which are basically competitive and where you try to wipe the other guy out and dominate on the one hand, and those that are, certainly non-competitive and tend to be cooperative and gentle, perhaps, on the other hand. That sort of distinction has always struck me as just plain simple, and indeed as betraying a terrible misunderstanding of what competition involves.
Well, what is that? What does it involve?
Well, think of how it is to think of a tennis match. You could play as hard as you can to win. You can contest every point as bitterly as possible. If you've won, I think there's something a bit wrong with you if you feel that you've triumphed in any sort of deep way over the other person, or if you've dominated that person, or if you've established superiority over that other person in any way besides in any sense besides the sense that you were better today on the tennis court. In fact, I mean, very often you come up off a tennis court. It's just after the matches which you've played the hardest. That you can feel the most comradeship and, you know, friendship with the person you've been playing with.
You're talking about sportsmanship and character.
Of course.
The very important point, that last one. The greater, I mean, if competition sort of drives people away, or is, you know, balkanizes the people or countries, or you know, this team and that team, why is it that what George said, I think is exactly true, the stiffer the competition, the greater the camaraderie?
Oh, yeah, and for myself, I want to play only with friends. I don't want to play with somebody I don't like. That very much diminishes the fun of it. And fun is not a word we've used yet, and I think the fun's an important word to use in connection with sports. I remember as my old handball days, there was a man with whom I played quite regularly, and he was the toughest competitor with whom I've ever played any game at all, and I never played harder against anybody than I played against him. And I remember one game in particular that we had that, emphasize the point that I'm going to make, I don't even remember who won, whether it was he or I, but it was just both of us played very hard indeed, and the difference in the score, as I recall, was 1 point or 2 points. And after it was over, and both of us just exhausted and sweating, we just instinctively grabbed each other and hugged each other. And I just thought that, now this is what sports is really about, genuine comradeship, friendship, respect, admiration. And we were involved in a good joint enterprise. Competition is a joint enterprise, after all.
It's amazing how pervasive that spirit is. One thing I'm always struck by, even after a boxing match, which arguably that's the most brutal sport of all, even after a boxing match, it's just so common to see these guys throw their arms around each other. They seem to have won one another's respect. And yet, it's very hard to get away from that sort of phenomenon, I think.
And yet one of them has triumphed. In the eyes of the public, one is better than the other. There is not only a moral but a physical victory. And isn't that what frequently gets transmitted to young people? Beating the other guy.
Winning is a better word. Beating has some connotations I don't quite like. But there's nothing morally wrong with either winning or losing that I can see.
Yeah, I agree with you, Bob. There's nothing wrong with winning, but talk about sports. Let's think, we keep shifting context, but let's think of school sports, let's say at the high school level or the grammar school level or Little League. Now, in our interest in having our team win or our children's team win, we can make some mistakes in the emphasis on winning, can't we? I mean, aren't you saying that we need to emphasize winning, but we need to emphasize winning within the rules?
Sure. 2 points here. One is rules, and I'd like to come back to that because I think that's an important concept in sports. Winning is a value, but it's not the only value, Vince Lombardi notwithstanding. When I step on the tennis court, I'm hitting the ball in order to win points, and that's the whole purpose of the moves that I make. As I say, it's not the only value, and the criticism of sports, Little League sports in particular, which have been rightly criticized, I think, is that it exaggerates or distorts that value, and I think that's quite right.
And yet the Lombardi philosophy seems to be so prominent that winning isn't the only, how does it go? Well, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing?
Yeah, but you know, what else goes along with it? I mean, I think we can certainly excuse excuse politicians eventually. We could certainly excuse a coach for one statement made perhaps in the heat of a halftime talk during a losing game. Literally, obviously, it's not true that winning is the only thing. But do we know something about Coach Lombardi that, in his passion for winning, that he told his players to cheat or to try to throw mud in the eyes of the opposition? Did he violate the sort of basic morality of the game, or the ethos of the game, the practice of the trade? I don't know. I may not be well enough read here, but I don't have the sense that people say, yes, Lombardi was a great coach. He was also a coach who encouraged his players to get away with more than any other coach has ever encouraged his players. I don't think he did. I think he suggested them run your sweeps and run them clean.
There is a problem with that, though. Even if you do play within the rules can't settle what you're supposed to do in every possible situation. So it would be a mistake, I think, to infer from the fact that something is not specifically outlawed by the rules to the conclusion that therefore it's okay to do it. That's a kind of legalism that I think maybe gets fostered by watching sports. The idea that well, if the law doesn't specifically outlaw it, then it's okay to do it, even if it involves, you know, cutting corners and doing things that maybe aren't too morally upright. As long as the law or the rules don't specifically say you can't do it, then you can do it.
Right. Well, I'd agree with that. There needs to be a kind of borrow a phrase from Lon Fuller, kind of internal morality to the game and to the players playing of the game, which obviously can't be covered by all the rules. But if we were talking about the Lombardi point, then I just put it that way. Do Jerry Kramer and Hanna and Jordan and the great players of that era have a reputation for having somehow being meaner guys as well as, you know, better defenders than other players? Did Lombardi instill a spirit of lawlessness, if not rulelessness, in the players?
Yes, I see what you mean. I have no reason to believe that Lombardi's players were any more guilty of this than anybody else. But I think the idea that that we make a sharp distinction between what the rules forbid and then everything else, which is permitted, is an oversimplification that can be really quite harmful.
But do the players make that? I mean, I guess if we're talking about whether sports teaches, the question is, do the players make that? And I was just thinking while you were talking that we do see camera close-ups of the cheap shots and so on, but we also see close-ups of guys patting, as football players do, each other in the rear end, gestures that suggest someone is saying good play, and the kind of thing Bob was talking about in connection with tennis. After the game, there's this massive mingling of people and the shaking of hands.
Yes. And based simply on what I read in the papers, there seems to be in the National Professional Football League, that's what we're talking about right now, an awareness on the part of the players that that each of the players is making his living out there, and that each player must respect that in every other player. And to take a cheap shot and to intentionally inflict harm, to put a player out of commission, is to rob him of his job, to rob him of his income, and I would like to believe, and I have reason to believe, that there is a kind of unstated law that we are not going to intentionally inflict harm on one another. This is our bread and butter. This is the way we make our living. Now, there are blacklegs in professional football, but there are blacklegs in every profession.
Should athletes be ethical?
Well,
everybody should be ethical, right?
Why is it that athletes, simply because of their prominence, that when one of them gets caught with the cheap shot or asking for too much money, sports is going down the tubes?
Well, they're on display. Obviously, that's one thing. And second, we do say to, I guess, young people that there's something they can learn from sports. And they are often, by their own choice or by the choice of somebody else, held out as examples to us at commercials. They go and they give talks at high school banquets, and they do all these commercials that say the United Way is working and I'm a good guy. And so when we see it, you know, what is the greater the piety, the greater the stench when the sin is committed.
Yeah, and to invoke a word that George used earlier, sportsmanship. It's interesting, isn't it, that word, sportsmanship, means fair play, consideration of others, and so on. So when somebody involved in sports is unsportsmanlike, the unsportsmanlike ness is even more pronounced. Sports people are supposed to be sportsmen.
You've been listening to Soundings, putting ideas into circulation in conversations originating from the National Humanities Center. Your host was Wayne Pond. We're interested in your comments. Write to us at the National Humanities Center, Post Office Box 12256, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina 27709. Director of the Center is William Bennett. Soundings is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities and distributed by the Public Affairs Broadcast Group Los Angeles, California.
This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center with an invitation for you to listen to Soundings, the center's radio program. The topic this week on Soundings is Sports and Social Values, a conversation with three sports-minded philosophers, one of whom is a representative from a major university to the National Collegiate Athletic Association. Sports and Society, this week on Soundings.